Thank you for standing by. This is the conference operator. Welcome to the Ascott Resources Limited Investor Update conference call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode, and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity for investors and analysts to ask questions. To join the question queue, you may press star then one on your telephone keypad. Should you need assistance during the conference call, you may signal an operator by pressing star and zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Derek White, President and CEO. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining me on our update call on the company's exploration activities. On the call with me today is Rob MacLeod, and some of the senior management from Ascott Resources. Today I'll be addressing a presentation which can be viewed on the company's website at www.ascotgold.com under the Investor tab and select Events, and you can view the presentation that I'll be referring to. Starting on the presentation, I would just remind viewers to read at their leisure our cautionary statement, as I will be making some comments on forward-looking information. As we turn to page three, I think what I'd like to do today is walk people through a little bit of some of the exploration activities that the company has been undertaking, while at the same time, working on its engineering and infill drilling program. With the exploration activities, I know a number of people may believe that the company hasn't been active in these areas, but that isn't actually true, and there's a number of different things that the company has been doing that I'd like to walk investors through. Starting on page three, it shows an outline of 25,000 hectare land holdings, which is really divided into the what we call premier or PGP ground, which banks up against the southern portion of Pretium's land holdings, and the former Red Mountain area to the southeast. In general, there are three types of exploration targets that we have been considering in this area. The first one are the known new potential zones related to the epithermal slash quartz breccias that we typically look for our gold and silver zones on. And the three deposits, being the Premier, the Big Missouri, and the Silver Coin, are located in these zones. There's two ridges that divide into really on the southern part of this property, and then kind of form more into one as they go up to the northwest part of the property. And the company has been pursuing exploration targets in this area, and we'll talk a little bit more in detail about that. The second area, which is a newer area, really sits on the northeast side of the property, and that northeastern area is a different contact zone, and that zone is really what we call the Dilworth contact. And that Dilworth contact in the southern part of it has additional epithermal type quartz breccias and stockworks, and the potential for VMS targets, which are similar to Estee Creek, given that these are the same rock sequences that Estee Creek was found with. And then the third really zone of exploration potential for us is on the Red Mountain area, where we have a little bit higher level of sulfides, and we've had some situations where the glaciers have been receding over the past little while, and that really has opened up areas that are like massive rock cuts to us, where there's a lot of newly exposed rock, and we've certainly seen a number of pyritic vein-style areas with high gold grades. And so we'd like to walk through in the presentation today a little bit about what we're doing on these three different areas. Turning to page four, just to give a little bit of an update in 2019 of how this has worked out for us in terms of drilling activity, we are planning to do about 8,000 meters of exploration drilling this year. And at the same time, we've just completed a little bit over 40,000 meters of infill drilling and geotechnical drilling, which have been related to the upgrade of our resources. We have approximately 20,000 meters of additional assays pending, and there should be a little bit more by the additional exploration activities we're doing as weather permits over the next month or so. Turning to page 5, and I'm not going to get into a lot of detail about this, but just to give some high-level understanding of what's happening here, basically the Hazelton Group rocks are really what we've seen in the Premier and in the Red Mountain area. And what we've been looking for and where we've been able to find gold in these areas in the past is in either hydrothermal or epithermal events, which have different levels of heat sources and sulfur, which determines to some level the associated minerals and fineness or coarseness of the ore. And that's typically where a lot of the exploration activities have taken in the past. Farther north from us, in the past, there was an area that many of you are aware of and is now owned by the Skeena company called Estee Creek, which was probably one of the more profitable mines in the Golden Triangle's history and in the world's history for that matter. And that was a VMS that kind of formed on the Dilworth-Bowser Lake contact. And that same type of stratigraphy also exists in areas of the northeast portion of our property. And so, trying to divide the company's attention into these three different areas, we'll walk the group through that a little bit. And starting on page 6, one of the areas that we've just recently started drilling and have become aware of is really what we call the Silver Hill area. And now this is in the category of the Dilworth-Bowser Lake type of contact zone. And here we're looking for two types of deposits. One are a different and new scene of what I would call epithermal quartz breccias with high grades that we've seen in the past, and also what I would consider targets for the same boundary or the VMS-style deposits, which we would see for Estee Creek. And this area has had some exploration activity on it in the past, and certainly our neighbors, Pretium, have made an announcement recently that they've been doing some work on this area on their side of the boundary. For what we're looking for here, again, is high-grade gold opportunities and silver opportunities. And we have done some work on the field over the last month, and we've actually taken a drill rig up there and started drilling some of these targets. And we have a picture on page 6 of one of the grab samples that was picked up in that area, and it has spectacular grade. We're talking about over 10,000 grams silver and 14 gram gold with byproduct lead and zinc at pretty high grades. And these structures tend to be a little bit similar to what we've seen farther south, but higher definitely in silver and a different time horizon than what we have in the things that are closer to our deposits. The activities here were really to do some geophysics, to put together the field mapping, to take the historical drilling that we've seen in this area and put together some drill targets, which we'll talk a little bit about in a minute. If we move over to slide 7, the other thing that the company actually did and we're quite excited about is the epithermal vein systems that we're drilling right now obviously have very, very high gold and extremely high silver grades. And we're what we're seeing in the rock is potentially multiple zones of these areas. Assays will still take some time to come back, but certainly from what we see now, it looks pretty good. But in addition to that, and a bit farther north from this, on that same what I would call Dilworth boundary, we've been able to put some geophysics together, and that geophysics is showing us some deeper anomalies. Again, we haven't been able to drill this yet, but this is certainly something that bodes well from a potential VMS-style type deposit. And it's deeper. We have to see what that is through drilling, but it's certainly quite exciting as we see some of the opportunities on this contact zone, which allows, typically a massive sulfide deposit to be determined. With regards to, Silver Hill and what we're doing there, there's really kind of a threefold approach that we're taking on the exploration. One is to drill these areas, and so we've been able to have a drill up there for a few weeks, and we'll continue to drill this week and hopefully a little longer into that area. It is a little bit higher up, so it is more weather dependent for us, but at the moment we're able to drill in that area to outline geophysical targets, which could be drilled into the near or not too distant future, and to make sure that we have a better understanding, just from surface mapping and understanding of where these vein systems are tending to go and the potential for VMS type targets into the future. The second area, and I'm now turning to page 8, that we'd like to talk a little bit about is that between our deposits, and we spoke about this a little bit earlier, we have one kind of what I would call major ridge that comes in the Yanup formation, and that basically divides into two just a little bit north of Big Missouri and then splits down with one ridge coming on the eastern side of our property that ultimately runs into the Premier Mine. And then the one that runs down the western side of the property that's between Big Missouri and then south of Silver Coin. And in those areas, we have obviously a lot of targets. And what we've been trying to do is pick the best targets that we think have the potential for new discoveries of high-grade gold and silver. And really those divide into three zones that we're looking at. One is called the Terminus Zone. And we're about to move the drill there in the not-too-distant future to do some drilling there. And that's a little bit northeast of Silver Coin on another side of a different fault zone. And what we have had is some historical drilling in that area and some historical trenching with pretty high grades. You know, you can see some of the 8 to 27 gram a ton gold grades and kind of typical silver grades over some different widths there. And so we will be putting a drill program in there very, very shortly to ascertain, the potential there, which we think is pretty high. The second kind of other area that we're looking at that we are quite optimistic about is a little bit northeast of Silver Coin, and we have good access to that area, and we can drill longer into the weather season there. And that's an area called the Day Zone and around that Day Zone. And again, we've had some pretty high gold grade historical drilling in that area in the past over the last 20 years. And it certainly merits follow-up to go and hit additional kind of new horizons that exist a little bit like Silver Coin. We've had quite a bit of success in drilling the Silver Coin and our ability to try and move to that direction is also, in the coming weeks, we hope to drill that. And then finally, we have been exploring south of Silver Coin, and there are some different opportunities along that ridge as we go down to the south. And, we've had some pretty high historical grade hits in that area and some trenching as well, which have indicated some pretty good targets. And so we're evaluating, because that's lower down in terms of elevation, it's probably the last place that we would try to drill for the season. And it, it's not as weather dependent as some of the things that are higher up. The third target, which I didn't really have a chance to talk about really, is on the Red Mountain side. And on the Red Mountain side, these glaciers have receded, and we've seen some. When I was last up in Stuart, had the privilege of going with Rob and he may want to comment later on these areas, but the glaciers have receded and we've seen some very high grade pyritic veins, which tend to have a pretty good width, anywhere from 3 to 6 meters wide, that seem to be dipping to the southwest. We don't know a lot about these areas. It's a little bit harder for us to drill these things. We certainly would like to get a better flavor for which way these dip, but we see a lot of potential to add to the resources there. And if we aren't able to drill those this year, then we had the ability to do some geophysics on it, determine where those dip, and try and get a drill rig in there, if not this year, or early in next year, to try and work on that. So, in summary, really turning to page 9, I think what I really wanted to make sure that people understand is that Ascot hasn't stopped exploration. It's something that we do at the same time as we do the infill drilling and developing a mine. And for, we do have a lot of pretty exciting targets, and we are trying to drill some of the better ones. And I appreciate, many investors would like to see us do that, in the right sequence. For us, we We have to balance the amount of infill drilling that we do to progress getting our feasibility study work done and doing exploration at the same time. And the company believes that, you know, that's the best way to pursue value ultimately for both in the short term and in the long term. We have a lot of additional drill results to come in over the next probably 2.5 to 3 months. This year, our arrangements with the assay group has taken a lot longer. Last year, we had the privilege of getting most of our assay results back within 3 to 4 weeks. This year, it's been taking us more like 6 to 7 weeks to do that. You know, we're still comfortable that a lot of the results that we see, at least in the core, hopefully will come to fruition as we release these results over the next 2 to 3 months. We obviously have a large land package in a very good location, and there are a lot of different targets for us. We can't drill every target all the time, we're trying to drill as many of the better or more exciting targets as we can, you know, as quickly as we can. I think the company has been very excited about what we've seen up in the northeast part of the property, and certainly that's a different style of target. And so far, you know, what we've seen in the drill and from the geophysics looks pretty exciting to us. We haven't had enough time to really get over to explore a lot of the other receding glacier areas in Red Mountain, and I may hand over to Rob, and he can talk a little bit more about that, but there's certainly a lot of opportunity for us to get over there. And, you know, certainly on the existing areas and between the deposits that we have, we still have a number of targets that have been identified both from surface and geophysics that we're trying to drill. Some of them have had some pretty historically high grade, and we obviously want to follow on that so that we can start to build new resources as we start to grow the potential at Premier. I would say that, you know, we've had some criticism, certainly from some of our shareholders, that we're not doing enough exploration. I would differ a little bit and say that, no, we haven't stopped exploration, and we certainly have a pretty promising program, and we're certainly trying to orient as much activity as we possibly can while balancing the other priorities that we have in the company. So with that, I'd like to hand back to the operator, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Certainly, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session for investors and analysts. To join the question queue, you may press star then one on your telephone keypad. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing any keys. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. We will pause for a moment as callers join the queue. Our first question comes from Justin Chan of Numa Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, Derek, Rob, and team. First of all, thanks for hosting the call. And I guess from my perspective, just before I start asking questions, I think I'm certainly very on side with the development strategy, and I think it's easier to have money for exploration once you're cash flowing. With that said, I realize it's an exploration call, but my first question is just on the sort of the near-term development timelines and the on the news flow timeline. I guess the updated feasibility on Red Mountain is scheduled for Q4, and I guess with that, when do you expect to have high-level economics for a combined project, combining Premier and Red Mountain?
So, Justin, I guess two comments on that. You know, one of the things that we're trying to balance is the timing of working on our Mines Act amendment with our feasibility work. And certainly, you know, one of the things for the reason for some of that delay is our tailings facility and the way that needs to be engineered has had to go and undergo a few changes. So we're just trying to work through that a little bit. And that isn't just up to us. It's also up to our NISHCA partners and also the regulators eventually to make sure that meets the right way of going. So that's one of the things that we're working on. And then I think that, you know, the timing of development for us is that although Red Mountain has been brought up to a feasibility level, you know, we've just completed about 42,000 meters of geotechnical and really infill drilling, which is really just completed in the third week of September. To bring that up to a feasibility level will take us another 4 months of mine planning and other work that would result ultimately in a feasibility level for Premier in early Q1. And prior to that, really anything that we're going to put out on Premier is really at a PEA level until those resources have been updated. So the goals for us were to work through the timing of getting the Red Mountain numbers out there, and that timing has slipped a little bit on us, and then ultimately really focus on the feasibility work that needs to be put in place for both projects as we get to a combined, what I would call, feasibility level for everything in early Q1.
Okay, perfect. So in Q4, should we expect a PEA on Premier, or is the main study going to be the feasibility on both in Q1?
Well, the main study in Q4, if you know, depending on timing of things, really is focused on Red Mountain's upgrade, because we don't have obviously any feasibility numbers in terms of the resources at Premier until those things have been upgraded. And that process will take us until the end of the year. So the main focus really of any initial numbers is on Red Mountain, with some what I would call option analysis on the PEA if that's you know, at the Premier level.
Okay. So as of now, I guess should I or we expect PEA level numbers, or is that to be determined, I guess?
Well, you know, I think the thing, Justin, that has slipped away from us a little bit is that we do need to coordinate that in terms of all three activities at the same time, and it obviously we would like to get that out there in Q4, but if the timing slips away too much on us, then it probably doesn't make a lot of sense. We'd rather just put everything out at one time, and so, you know, I guess that's still in discussion on the tailings type part of it. So I think you know, that's something that we're going to have to make a decision on pretty quickly, just depending on how those discussions go.
Okay, perfect. Understood. And just on the regional exploration and especially Silver Hill, I guess when do you expect that we might get results? And I guess as a follow-up to that, what is the workable season? How many more weeks or I guess how much longer can you continue drilling there, and then what are you hoping for before the winter sets in terms of results, and what are you hoping to get out of the program?
So I'll start with, you know, we've been drilling up there for about a week and a half now. It's the highest elevation of all the areas we're working with. I mean, every season is different. You know, typically drilling here happens till roughly the end of October. Sometimes it goes till the middle of October. Sometimes it goes earlier. It just really, it's really weather dependent, so it's a little hard to say, but we're going to stay up there until we get enough drill results that we're happy with. As I said earlier on the call, right now it has been taking us longer to get the assay results back, and that's frustrating for us, but it is what it is. We can't necessarily change that. You know, a lot of people in the Golden Triangle and in who are up high really are ending their drilling seasons now. As the end of September comes, a lot of people are starting to pack it in, so it's possible that we may be able to get those assay results back quicker. But if you said, okay, we're drilling now and, you know, we're going to give it sort of 5 weeks till we can get assays out, you're talking about assays coming out sometime near the end of October, early November. Now, if we can go quicker than that, that would be great. But based on what I've experienced so far this summer, that's sort of the time frame.
Okay. And just two more for me quickly. One is, I guess as a follow-up, I just lost my train of thought there. Instead of the follow-up, I guess my other question was on the Mines Act amendment. Would it be fair to say that would be fairly concurrent with the feasibility study?
We've talked a lot about this, and, you know, I mean, I think we were optimistic about the timing of that. It makes a lot of sense to try and bring all the things together at one time. You know, the Mines Act amendment works on everything, but it's especially focused on tailings and water treatment. There's a lot of back and forth on what is the, you know, best way of going about that. And so ideally, we'd like to wrap that all together. We don't want piecemeal information coming out. So to some level, I would see those things dovetailing to the extent possible.
Okay, yeah, and I just remembered my other question on Silver Hill, which is the development concept that would also feed the Premier Mill, and you drill it up perhaps as you get into production at Premier, and then it would eventually come in later?
Yeah, we are talking about spectacular silver grades. Like, you're talking about some of the high, you know, I'm aware, I sit on the board of MAG Silver and Fresnillo is some of the, and Juanicipio of some of the highest silver grades in the world, but these are even higher. These are spectacular silver grades. And certainly if you actually went back and looked at Estee Creek, although it's slightly different than what we're doing right now, it was more of a silver mine than it was a gold mine. In the past at our mill, they did have a Merrill-Crowe circuit that was focused on high-grade silver. And, you know, I mean, it, depending on how this works, like, we can certainly process this kind of material the way it is. If the silver grades are looking as high as what we've seen, we would consider, you know, okay, we would have to augment our circuit a little bit to make sure that we got the maximum recovery on silver, because right now we're kind of getting about a 70% recovery on silver. At these kind of grades, we would have to augment that. But there's no question that this material would be processed in our mill. And on more VMS-style deposits where you might have higher base metal content, I guess that's something we'd have to see in the future. Metallurgically, we'd have to look at that. But for what we're seeing right now, completely processable in our mill, we wouldn't want to lose any of the silver because these grades are just so astronomically high.
Right. Okay, excellent. Thanks a lot. I've hogged the line for long enough, so I'll let everyone else get their questions in. Thanks very much, Greg.
Yep, thank you.
The next question comes from Bob Fraz, private investor. Please go ahead.
The Silver Creek Trench, you said it's a historic trench. How long ago has that been, was that dug and those results available?
Well, really, and I'm gonna hand over to Rob here. So, you know, there was, before Pretium or Ascot were involved in these areas, there were people chasing high-grade silver, not just on our property, but right adjacent to it. And I believe some trenches were put in place in the past. So, Rob, maybe you could answer that.
Yeah, sure. There were actually a couple of different phases of work, and I'm going to refer to three. There are some old underground workings, which were looking a little too dicey for our crews to get into to inspect. The trenches date to the Westman era. So the 1990s, and
we've known about it for a while.
Yeah, we've known about this for a while. But, you know, honestly, we got to give a bit of a credit to our neighbors to the north there at Pretium, and they've really been focusing. They've got four drill rigs that are working on Eske Creek type targets, and when you're high up above the tree line, it's pretty difficult to camouflage drills, and if a guy's flying by in a helicopter and you see whereabouts they're drilling to the north of us, honestly, it really helped us to, maybe we should go up there and see what it is they're looking at again. But finally, and we're past the statute of limitations, but I used to work for Homestake Mining Company, the operator of Eske in the mid-90s. And we had a significant regional program looking for more Eske creeks, but looking at the chemistry of the volcanic rocks, and in this case, rhyolites, that are geochemically very similar to Eske Creek, and won't get into the boring details why. But of course, at that time, Westman had the property, not Homestake. But it's really, really exciting looking rocks up there.
Bob, it's Derek speaking again. Just to answer your question again, just a little bit. You know, I think you know, and again, we've only been in the company a little under 2 years, but I think in the past there was a view that maybe this wasn't really going to amount to something, or that it just got a little bit overlooked. Rob is right. You know, Pretium basically started to do some work on this and made a press announcement recently. And, you know, one of the things that as a newcomer, I don't have any bias from the past or whatever. I spoke to some of our geologists and said, I think you need to go up there and start looking around in the field about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And when they got up there and started looking, you know, and they started scratching a little more, they realized, wow, there was surface expressions of pretty good-looking veins with electrum right on surface. And so they immediately realized, look, this is an area that's a little bit out of the way from where we normally are, and realized, look, there's a lot more potential here than we gave it credit for. And I'm not a geologist, but I am an engineer, and at least I was able to say, look, I think we got to go do something up there. So once they figured that out, they put a drill rig up there pretty quickly.
Okay. Because I'm looking at, you know, you look at the Terminus Zone, the Day Zone, the Woodbine Zone, now the Silver Hill. I mean, there's a lot of potential. And we've been having, what do we have, 4 rigs idle and $18 million in the bank. And historically, we've the exploration has been driven by money, but we had lots of money, we had lots of rigs, and we just left them. I mean, we're so vulnerable as a company. And it seems to me like, even though you said we were exploring, it doesn't seem like we're doing anything until now, which is 4 weeks before the snow flies.
I think what I would say to you is that, you know, you have to understand from our perspective, you know, and I'm going to speak more holistically in the long-term value of the company. What we have to try to do is balance both exploration and our ability to bring a mine back into production. Because ultimately, I guess management in this case, you know, who built a lot of mines, feel most comfortable when we're producing cash so we don't dilute the shareholders. And so we have to have a balance between what work we have to do to try and bring a mine into production. And you may think that's easy, but the reality is it takes a lot of infill drilling to bring into what we would call feasible level reserves. So we have to balance how much exploration we can do and how much infill drilling we can do. And we have to time that as well, because one of the problems we have is that if we do the infill drilling too late, it pushes out our time frame because we have to do a lot of additional work after we do this. So it's not like all the money we have is just for exploration drilling. You know, 43,000 meters of infill drilling actually costs a lot of money, and all the engineering work around that and permitting work and all that actually takes up quite a lot of our treasury to do that work. So the way that I would like to explain it, I guess, to shareholders is you kind of get both things in this company. You get the ability to have a mine built at significant value for a very low capital, and you get the exploration potential as well. And, you know, even if I put a hole into a new exploration target and it looks really great, that's fantastic and it's great news, but there needs to be a lot of other follow-up drilling before I can actually bring that into my reserve. So as a company, I have to balance with a limited amount of resources how I do both of those things. And so I just hope that you can appreciate that it isn't that we just have all kinds of money and time and effort that can just go only to exploration. We have to do both things at the same time.
No, I get that, and I appreciate the fact the infill drilling was important because we've got to get to that critical mass to build a mine. I get that. It's just we have rigs idle, and we've got, like, zones in between Silver Coin and Big Missouri that, I mean, we could have had 3 or 4 rigs going there all year and maybe tie that whole thing into the resource that we're going to hopefully get out in the first quarter. To me, we're such a vulnerable company at these prices because our prices dropped 65% in the last 2 years, and gold's gone up, and other juniors are going up, and we're just sitting there. And if Pretium's getting great results just north of it, I mean, they're trading at what, $17 a share? They can come in and steal us for $2.50 a bloody share. And how many feasibility studies we have, we won't be around.
I can't argue with you that the share price has been, you know, it's been very challenging for us. I'm not here to argue with that. I just would like you to appreciate that it is not like we're sitting around doing nothing. It takes time for us to get these targets, and it takes time for us to do all this work. And so, you know, basically we're trying to do what we think is the right balance of it. I've certainly heard from yourself and other shareholders between the lines that we need to upgrade the level of exploration for new zones. And, you know, we take what people tell us to heart, and we did make some changes in August, and that's one of the reasons why you're seeing Silver Coin and some of these other things happening. And so the company is constantly trying to balance what we're doing. Our ability and our the amount of effort it takes, and, you know, when you talk about extra rigs and everything else, we have to do not only infill drilling, we have to do geotechnical drilling, we have to do hydrological drilling. There's a lot of different things that take different skill sets that have to be balanced. So I appreciate that we are vulnerable and we're trying to address that. But, you know, I think the company, for right or for wrong, is trying to basically balance all those things that are important to us.
Our next question comes from Mike Hahn of AIS Group. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks so much for doing the call. And I thought that your answer to that last question was really great. I know this isn't a discussion, but I kind of look at it on the other side of that. I think the market isn't really paying for exploration right now. And as a shareholder, exploration is great, but if you're just going to have to raise money at a share price below the cost of finding that gold, you know, if you spend $18 million and find ounces that the market doesn't pay for and then raise money at 60 cents a share, I just counterpoint, I agree with the strategy. I think it's better to get cash flowing, and it's Barkerville that just happened yesterday, and they've constantly raised money at 52-week lows, and I think that company got stolen, so I hope that doesn't happen to this company, but it's not easy to raise capital, and it's not as simple as just, in my humble opinion, just jamming the rigs out there and drilling. So thanks for that answer. That was helpful. I guess the question would be, you know, how do you get out of this financing overhang? Because it is going to take money to, you know, to launch, to get back into production. I think you've done some great things strategically by combining projects, so you get some synergies, and you have a low CapEx compared to a lot of other projects and a lot of, like you said, exploration upside. But even to get that $100 million for CapEx is tough in this market. So do you have any willingness to partner strategically? You know, what kind of mix do you see, equity versus debt? And then I know you have some assets that you could sell as well. So that's kind of what I'd like some color on. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome, Mike. You know, let me, I guess, talk a little bit about the financing options that are available to a company. And, you know, there's a kind of an old adage in the mining industry that if you have a good project, it will get financed. A lot of people think of finance only from the equity market, but that's not the only source of capital that potentially for a good project works. You know, one of the reasons for wanting to have a feasibility study on the various projects is that basically that opens up some different avenues to us that, you know, are not just equity. So that's debt, that's royalty financing, and that's also strategic partners and, you know, even people at project interests. What we're ultimately trying to do is protect the shareholders from, you know, A, too much dilution, and B, by over-leveraging an asset too much, you know, that puts too much debt risk on a project. And so we try to find the right balance to do that. And, you know, our strategy here is kind of a what I would call a spoken and hub strategy. We have a kind of a centralized mill facility with what I would call spoke deposits and the ability to put more spokes by adding more exploration into it. The short-term share price for us tends to be right now set by more people who are interested in the exploration upside that, you know, because, you know, face it, this was one of the largest gold mines in North America for a long period of time. And the longer-term value tends to be set by our ability to actually bring this back into production and revalue the company on a cash flow multiple basis. And so as we complete that feasibility study, you know, we go out into the market on all sources of capital and we start evaluating what is the best path for us to go forward. And that is the combination of each one of those different opportunities, whether it's debt or royalties or strategic partners at an equity level or equity itself. And we try to come up with the right mix so that we can get into a position to produce cash flow that allows us to stop the dilution to the shareholders. And, you know, obviously, you know, if the price is just too low and we just can't make a good piece mix, then we either have to just wait and try and get ourselves into a better position or we end up creating a lot of dilution. So I think that journey of giving you the exact deck equity, royalty, whatever mix really is going to be facing us as we go into the feasibility period in Q1. And so, you know, to me, I guess I can't really give you an exact answer. All I can tell you is that we're looking at all those things, and I know there's a number of people on these calls that represent different sources of that capital, and they'll be having discussions with us as we go forward kind of on that basis. So I don't know if that answers your question. In regards to the two, what I would call non-core assets, we are in a process where we are trying to dispose or sell our Swamp Point gravel asset. It's a longer process than we'd hoped for. People that make concrete have a lot of testing requirements for their concrete, and that does take us some time, but that process is well underway. And on the copper asset, you know, we've had some bids, basically not cash bids, but to move that into a different vehicle. Some shareholders have said to me, look, you don't get any value for that. You know, how do you kind of put that in a different space? We've been looking at some opportunities to try and at least get some value for that, and maybe not selling it, but at least putting it in a vehicle where the shareholders can have a different exposure to that copper asset. But we have been thinking about those things as well.
Okay, yeah, thanks so much for that thorough answer. And so just quick follow-up, because other people want to ask questions. So that all makes sense. It's a balancing act. What, just out of interest, what do you think your finding cost is? And I don't remember your exact ounces. I think it's that you have.
Well, we have just under 3 million, about 2.8 to 2.9 million ounces in resources in the different categories, 50% of which is measured and indicated resources, and the other amount is inferred, and we're obviously trying to bring that up to a reserve level. And so it's not just the discovery level of the ounces, it's what cost does it take to take it to a reserve level. And it's different for different ounces because it depends on the geometry of the stuff. But as some broad strokes, I would say that to get to a reserve level is probably in the sort of $70 to $80 per ounce level. That's kind of what it takes to get it to a reserve level, depending on the level of deposit. Your first hole is obviously a lot cheaper, but you know, generally the pattern here when you're working towards this thing is you start with a discovery hole, then you add more holes, then you build enough holes to build a resource, then you move that up to measured and indicated resource, and then ultimately with economics you move that over to reserves. And you have to consider that whole path to get it to ultimately a mine plan.
Yeah, so that's great. That's what I'm trying to get at. So, you know, you last raised capital at a market cap close to where you are right now. So, you know, that's $50 Canadian per ounce. So basically what you just told me is that to dump that $18 million into the ground, it's going to cost you more than it's dilutive to your value, because it's going to cost $70 or $80 and you raised money at $40 an ounce. So it maybe is better to advance to production and start getting some cash flow. At least that's how I take that answer.
Yeah, you know, I think, within the money that we were going to spend this year, we had provided for doing some exploration, and we have to balance on, you know, you're talking very general guidelines here, but, you're always constantly trying to upgrade your resources and, you know, the geometries and other things play into account. So getting new resources, especially if they're high grade, every million tons of new resources that we can put into this adds multiple, like I'm talking, I can't give you the exact number, but let's just call it 50 to 100 million, you know, value of NPV. So the uplift of getting something into the NPV is quite significant. You have a huge torque by putting more ounces through an already existing fairly low capital infrastructure. And so within your budget, you kind of need to be able to say on the mix of things, you know, like it isn't necessarily overall dilutive. Like there's a certain amount of exploration that you need to be able to do because it's not quite as prescriptive. Because, for example, if I tap into something that gives me a mining cost, which is half of what it is, that is very, very accretive to the shareholders. And if I don't do that drilling, I can't figure that out. So, I mean, you got to balance all those things, you know, kind of up and down. So I wouldn't say that there's just any one general rule. I think there's some general guidelines that you're speaking to that are correct, but you do have to balance that out.
This concludes the question and answer session. I would now like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Derek White for any closing remarks.
Okay, well, thank you for the questions. What I would like to reiterate is, look, we do have a lot of exploration potential here. There's some spectacular grades that both historically and we're seeing in the ground. And we don't obviously want to dilute shareholders, but we also believe that there's a lot of opportunity to add some new story here and to actually improve our overall economics. We are continuing to do both things, which we think are important, which is to do the work towards getting towards a cash flow producing mine and do the exploration at the same time. We think that the program we have over the next month or so, really allows us to open up some new opportunities, and we're hoping that those assay results, when they come out, will start to indicate, the potential upside that we have beyond the resources that we have. And as we bring the feasibility studies and permit requirements into place, whether you're a person that likes exploration or a person that wants cash flow, we think this company really offers both. And the management's ability to juggle both things in a given year, I think, has been pretty good. You can say, I'm getting a great exploration story with a free option on a mine, or you can say, I'm getting a great mine story with a free option on exploration. And I would hope that people would continue to follow the story on that basis. So thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining the call. And certainly our details are there. And if there's follow-up questions that people would like to ask myself or Christina or Rob, please give us a call. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating and have a pleasant day.